Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Today, we have a wonderful sponsor. It's Paws for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Paws for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind. It's amazing. They offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those who already have post-traumatic stress disorder to train these service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. They just rely on donations, my friends. So if you get a moment, go to www.pawsforpurpleheartsorg. Okay, and we have to do this, and we have to do this for the new year. It's time for brand new legal goo for the year 2014. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and please remember that, okay. Trisha's True Crime Radio is not in any way associated with WebSleuths.com LLC or ForumsForJustice.org. Those are their own entities. Trisha's True Crime Radio is its own entity. And if you hear something on the show that you don't like, you don't go to the forums, you come to me, Trisha, and we'll do our best to make you happy all over again. Tonight, we welcome the wild and wonderful Holly Hughes from CNN. A bit later, our friend Cheryl McCollum will join us. And then to round out the night, at the end of the show, Levi Page will be with us to talk about his new show. And, of course, as always, my incredible host, Michael in Minnesota, co-host, that is. Michael in Minnesota is with us, but first, it's back to normal life tomorrow for most of us. Holiday break is over, and 2014 really, truly begins. Did you make a New Year's resolution? I did. My resolution is, when someone asks what I look like, I will no longer say, I look like the love child of Linda Ronstadt and Ernest Borgnine, because it used to be a joke, and then I looked in the mirror the other day, and I swear I could see Ernest Borgnine all through my face, scared the wazoozie out of me. What exactly is the wazoozie? Well, it's what got scared out of me when I looked in the mirror. So I'm not going to say that anymore. I'm also going to try and eat better, not diet, although Lord knows I could stand to lose a few metric tons, but I want to eat fruits and veggies, and the 4 macadamia white chocolate cookies I ate just a few minutes ago are my last. But the main thing I'm going to try and do is not rush to judgment. I learned, as did many of you, from the George Zimmerman case. And for those of you actually living in Middle Earth this past year, George Zimmerman claimed he shot a 17-year-old named Trayvon Martin in self-defense. Many thought it was a racial shooting. The jury found Zimmerman not guilty. Now, many people, including myself, did not think it was self-defense at first. I decided he was guilty of shooting an African-American teenager because he profiled him and that Trayvon did nothing wrong. Well, come to find out, in the trial, it pretty much happened the way Zimmerman said it did. It was legally self-defense, although I still hold Zimmerman responsible because he was carrying around that gun. If he didn't have the gun, Trayvon would still be here. Anyway, I learned my lesson. Until I have seen both sides, I will do my best not to automatically judge someone guilty or not guilty. And my final resolution, to stop babbling on and get to the topic of the show. And the topic tonight will be Jodi Arias, our one that we love to hate, and we'll also hear about George Zimmerman and later on the very strange case of Dr. Talika Patrick. But first, let's welcome Holly Hughes from CNN. Holly, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy New Year, Trish. I'm thrilled to be with you for your first show of the year.
Thank you. Yes, it is our first show, and I'm delighted that you're with us today. And Michael from Minnesota, are you ready? Are you warm enough to do this show?
Yeah, the heat's still working in Minnesota.
What's the temperature?
Thank you, Trisha.
Hey, what's the low tonight?
The current temperature right now is 10 below, and the wind chill is 27 below.
That's just ungodly. I mean, and is it expected to lift anytime soon, I hope?
No, not till Tuesday. We'll be at 4 above, but then that night we dip below zero again. But the low tonight, Tricia, is going to be 24 actual degrees with wind chills of 60 below.
Oh, my God.
High tomorrow of 12 below. Yeah.
I can't, you know, that
so my
hurts
New Year's
me.
My New Year's resolution is to stay in when it's that cold.
Exactly. Don't you dare go out. Absolutely not. Well, I think things are a bit nicer in Georgia. Holly, let's talk about the the Dixie Mafia, first of all, before we get into all this other stuff, you are doing something that is so cool and so fun and so amazing. I want to talk about the Dixie Mafia. We're going to talk some gossip about HLN, and then we'll get into all the true crime stuff. But tell us about this Dixie Mafia video on YouTube, and what are you doing? This is just wild. I love it.
Okay. Yeah, this is a great opportunity for me. There is a director by the name of Anthony Voorhees, and Anthony has been watching me on CNN and HLN for years now. You know, I've been doing legal commentary. And he said to me, he contacted me through my publicist and said, you are just so great on air, and you've been a prosecutor and a defense attorney, and I'm trying to make this pilot. I'm trying to sell a pilot to Hollywood based on some, you know, true stories in the past. There actually was and may still be a Dixie Mafia. So he invited me to come to one of his studios here in Atlanta and film just a little segment of what we're hoping will catch somebody's eye in Hollywood. So what we've done is we've posted it on YouTube. If you look up Dixie Mafia, you will see the director, Anthony, and I doing just a short little scene wherein I play a very hardened homicide detective, trying to take down this man. So it's quite a bit of fun, and we're trying to get the hits up. I think we're at about 3,900, but we'd like to generate some more traffic.
So how do we do that? We go to YouTube, and we put in the search engine what?
Dixie Mafia.
I will find the actual link. I'll put it on Web Sleuth and Forums for Justice, and I'll put it on my Twitter account as well. We'll get those hits up, because if we can get a lot of hits, then Hollywood will go, hey, this looks like it's pretty good. I think that would be so cool. Just don't forget the little people like us, Holly, when you make it big, okay?
No. Nothing little about you or what you do, Tricia. This is so important
you're sweet.
For justice. And you had mentioned HLN is making some changes.
Okay, but I mean,
HLN,
I know. Go, tell us everything you know. Everything.
Okay. Well, everybody knows Jeff Zucker took over CNN a while ago, about a year and a half, 2 years maybe, and he has brought in a fellow by the name of Albie Hecht, who was very instrumental in turning around Spike TV and getting their ratings way up. And what they've decided on the HLN side is to go more for an entertainment type of show as opposed to a lot of the crime and justice. Now, Nancy Grace will still be with us, still be doing her thing. She is, you know, their highest rated show, so they've decided they're going to keep her in place, but they have decided not to cover the trials like we used to daily. You know, if there was a big trial like Jodi Arias, who we're going to be talking about a little later, we would cover that and then come out and make the commentary. So now those of us who have been doing the legal commentary on the HLN side have some time freed up, which is why I'm hoping to parlay, you know, the Dixie Mafia into some acting jobs, since I will not be able to do a lot of the crime and justice on the HLN side because of the change in format.
Ah, got it. Okay, what about Jane Velez Mitchell?
Well, as far as we know, Jane and Dr. Drew are still going to be with us, but they won't necessarily be covering the law and justice as much as they were. You know, when we had these big trials, you would see all three of those shows, which run back to back to back, covering those trials mostly. That was their whole story. But they're going to try to switch it up. You know, they'll still comment on it because, of course, it's news, and it is still a news channel. But they're trying to also have them cover more of the entertainment stories and look into, you know, what's going on in Hollywood. You know, we all love to know what's going on with the Hollywood folks and listen to what's going on there. So we see a lot of that being covered as well now.
Got it. Let's switch back to the Dixie Mafia really quickly. We have Ollie, too, in the chat room saying that there are several Dixie Mafia links to choose from. Do you care which one, or does it need to, are you in all of them, or do you know which one you are in specifically?
Oh, you know what? I don't know. Maybe if you put my name in with it.
Okay.
I apologize for that, but the director is the one who did all the posting on the YouTube, so...
Got it. It's the one with Holly Hughes in it, so maybe put Holly Hughes in the search engine, and we want to get the right one up there. We got to have Holly's link up there. That's the one we want to see, and that's the one we care about.
Yeah.
Okay, I have all these, like, behind-the-scenes, just gossipy questions that I know you have too much integrity to answer, so I won't even ask you. But maybe someday, over drinks, you can give me the true scoop. Okay, anyway, I know that, I'll be honest with you, Holly, there's a lot of people, myself included, they'll be disappointed because one of the reasons we watched HLN was because they were the only ones that had the trials. And now it's just going to be, what is that, Wild Out Trial, and that's on the Internet, and I don't know who else is going to cover him. So we'll wait and see. I mean, Jeff Zucker, he's a smart man. He was he's the guy who brought up the Today Show. When the Today Show had its big glory days, it was because of him. Am I thinking of the right person?
Yes. He's been in the business for a really long time and has been responsible for turning a lot of different programs around. And, you know, I feel the same way you do. I mean, not just because I was involved and I got to be on air and got to talk about it, but because there is such a need out there. You know that True TV they canceled In Session, which was where we all watched our trials. Then HLN picked it up, and now HLN has made the executive decision, as it were, to not cover them. So there's a big void out there, and a lot of my fans on Facebook and on Twitter are saying, you know, what is going on? And the bottom line is, you know, unfortunately, nobody called and asked my opinion. I find that so hard to believe that Jeff Zucker did not personally consult me before changing the programming.
Really?
But, you know, the only thing we can do is do what folks are already doing. You know, send emails to CNN, send emails to HLN, and just say, hey, you know what? We really are going to miss this, and you're going to lose me as a viewer if you don't make some type of concession to cover these trials. Because, like you just said, a lot of people watch HLN very specifically for that genre.
Right. I have a prediction, and we'll see in a year if it comes true. I predict that HLN's ratings will go down so low because Nancy Grace, that's what she does. She covers, I mean, she's good at it.
Right.
She makes me crazy sometimes, but she's good at it. They'll go. Everybody expects when you make a change, your ratings will drop and then come back up. That's to be expected.
Right.
But I know nothing about this change. The little bit I do know about television, I can guarantee you that Jeffrey Zucker and CNN had all kinds of focus groups. They spent probably tons of money on research, and this is what they were told the audience wanted. However, I believe that the ratings will dip, and they will have a heck of a time bringing them back up, and I don't think it's going to be the big success that Zucker thinks it might be, only because he's competing with everything else. And you know, that's the thing. But, again, Jeffrey Zucker is certainly in a much better position than I am. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. So we'll wait and see here. Anyway, Michael in Minnesota, I want to check with you first before we continue on. Any comments, thoughts, ideas? What's on your mind, darling?
Well, absolutely. I echo. It would be one thing if we had several stations covering court cases that were of interest or high profile in the nation. But really, the other news stations, MSNBC and Fox, are strictly political. CNN will touch on the cases, but they only do a two-minute segment on a trial and move on. It's not the full coverage we all crave. Now, I think HLN did do a terrible disservice to themselves when they tried to air the Jody Arias trial gavel to gavel with all those commercials. So the trial, which got over at 4 o'clock in Arizona, was sometimes still airing when Dr. Drew went on the air, and we were having to – I mean, that was ridiculous. So I can see where that was probably frustrating to viewers, but – and I can also see why they wouldn't want to have several hours of programming devoted to the very same topics ad nauseum. But it seems like it would be really wise to keep at least one of those shows focused on trials, because there are people like me who don't care about Lindsay Lohan and her latest drunk driving conviction or whatever Hollywood has to spin out. It's just of no interest to me.
We'll have to wait and see. The good news is, though, Holly, your show is intact on CNN, and we can still see you. Give us the time and the date. It comes on Saturday, right?
Yeah. I'm on CNN Newsroom every Saturday in the 5 o'clock hour, and we do that show live, and then you can usually catch a rerun of that same clip later on in the 7 o'clock hour as well on CNN. So I'm on the Newsroom show doing a legal segment called Making the Case every Saturday. I've been doing that gig for about 2.5 years, and I was with the wonderful Don Lemon for a very long time, for the past 2.5 years, and now Don has a new show on CNN at 11 o'clock during the weeknight. So I've lost him as my anchor, but we've had some fantastic substitute anchors. I've been working with Rosa Flores lately, worked with Martin Savage this past Saturday. And again, that's another one where, you know, they're trying to figure out who is the best fit as an anchor for that show. But I am always on, usually between 5:15 and 5:30, doing a legal segment.
That is good to know. At least we have that, right, Michael? At least we have Holly Hughes doing legal views and ideas at Saturday night, and it's at 5 o'clock Eastern, right?
That's correct.
Okay, great. And so, Michael, at least we have that, but I want to say I agree with you totally, Michael. I think they need to keep a segment on HLN for the trials, but we'll have to wait and see. Jeffrey Zucker, he's no slouch. He knows what he's doing, so... Then again,
right, and bear in mind, guys, Nancy is still going to be there. Nancy
right,
is still
exactly.
going to be doing the doing what Nancy does best, which is cover that crime and justice. And whether you agree with her or not, you're going to get that coverage. You're going to be able to see what's going on in that courtroom.
Exactly.
That's
the good news. That is the good news there. Okay, let's move on to crime. Let's talk about our favorite person that we love to hate, and that's Jodi Arias. And apparently, I found this on one news story about this, and I haven't checked on Web Sleuth, and it probably is on Web Sleuth right now, but now I have to find it here. Where did it go? Anyway, she is complaining because she no longer trusts the person that is tweeting for her or doing her Facebook, basically. You know, she's saying that she entrusted this person to control her blog, and she's not doing what she wants. Has anybody heard about this?
Absolutely, but I don't believe it. I think what she's referring to, truthfully, Tricia, is that long, rambling letter that was shown on, well, I saw it on the State versus Jodi Arias page, and I think what her issue was, I don't think that was meant to be as public as it became. And so she's trying to backtrack. But it sounded exactly like her, where she was asking everyone to call. You saw it. I posted the link last week, I think, where she just went on and on about the haters need to be stopped in their tracks and do everything you can to screenshot and this, that, and the other thing.
And it did sound like Jodi Arias. And so you're saying, Michael, that Jodi is now trying to lay the blame on the person that is actually putting the stuff up on the social media for her, right? But it really was Jodi.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely. That
I don't know if you
got,
it was a textbook Jodi Arias. And I don't know, Holly Hughes, if you had a chance to see this or not, but it was a long letter. And it was just like Michael said, it was bizarre. She was giving instructions on, you know, how to stop the haters and, you know, had to raise money. And it was just bizarre. But I'm sure this is no surprise to you, right?
Right. She's a megalomaniac, you know. And, Trisha, I got to tell you, this is just breaking my heart. Poor Jodi feels betrayed because the person she trusted to put stuff out on her Twitter account has done her wrong. Well, how about this? How about Travis Alexander trusted her not to kill him and slit his throat and shoot him, okay?
There you go.
So you
That's
know what?
Perfect.
I mean, really, Jodi, this is what you have to complain about? This doesn't surprise me in the slightest. And Michael is right. It is classic her. She has to be in charge. She has to be calling the shots. I mean, we saw this from the very first time the police ever spoke to her, where they called her up and they said, we want to talk to you. Oh, well, what's going on? Can you tell me? I mean, she is trying to run that interview. We watch her in the police tapes, you know, and she's just deny, but trying to get the police officers to tell her things, just like in the trial. And now we hear she's trying to fire her lead lawyer, Kirk Nurmi, and she's telling the judge, I don't want him to represent me. She has to be in control. This is just like when Travis said, I'm not going to see you anymore. Well, look what she did to him. So,
exactly.
Again, she's not in control. She's not getting what she wants. She's not getting all the adulation she thinks she deserves. So, of course, she's going to lash out. But Michael hit the nail on the head. When you look at that text and you look at do this, do that, these are my instructions, of course it's her. Of course
Without a
it's
doubt.
Her.
Well, and here's some good news for our side anyway, and this is according to our friend Kathy at Court Chatter. She writes, as the parties emerged from the courtroom, prosecutor, this was the last hearing that took place a few days ago. As the parties emerged from the courtroom, prosecutor Juan Martinez looked pleased while Arias attorneys Kirk Nurmi and Jennifer Wilmot did not. Holly, do you know anything about that? What the deal was going on there?
Well, they're trying to set down a new date. That is the biggest issue before the court right now, is the scheduling. And what I would assume, and I do not know this for a fact, but based on what we're hearing, you know, that Juan Martinez is looking pretty happy about things and her attorneys are, first of all, you know how difficult she is. So her attorneys are going to be displeased anyway because they're stuck with a client who will not take their advice, will not listen to them, and is trying to run the show despite the fact that she does not have a law degree, and they do. So, yes, they're distracted. Yes, they're upset. But I imagine what she's trying to get her lawyers to do is get those cameras back in the courtroom. This has all been behind closed doors because Judge Sherry Stevens is trying desperately to not taint that pool. They are trying to be able to ensure that when they get a new jury to decide death or life, that they're not tainted by the media. They haven't seen all the coverage. They don't know what's happening. And so she's keeping those cameras out because she's trying to preserve the integrity of this next process. And so Jody has probably told her lawyers, go in there and make the judge let the cameras back in the courtroom. You know, this woman is up for, she's already been convicted, she is up for life or death. And the most important thing to her is who's watching, who thinks
and
I'm cute, my hair look good.
Exactly right. How many marriage proposals can I get? How many men can I get to send me money and to fall in love with me? You're absolutely right. And Michael, you and I have discussed this before. There was we both feel, and I don't mean to speak for you, but we both feel that there should be cameras in the courtroom. And I think, and I understand, I understand the prosecutor's feeling. He doesn't want to taint that jury. Michael, what do you think about that?
Well, Juan is for it. If you read the arguments that happened in court during that session, Juan said it's insulting to you, Judge Stevens, to claim that the cameras in the court somehow made their way inside the courtroom because you ran a very tight ship, and no matter what was going on behind outside, because of the cameras, had no effect on what was happening inside. So Juan was rather indifferent. The biggest problem, of course, as we all know, was the witness intimidation factor as far as Alice LaViolette receiving death threats, and supposedly that friend of Jody's couldn't even dare to testify. She claimed because of death threats. I believe it was more because Juan said, I'll bring up this, that, and the other.
Yeah, all the dirty stuff.
Bigger trouble, yeah.
Right.
So you can pick and choose what you choose to believe out of that circus of clowns, but I agree with Holly. I believe Jody would want the cameras, and I think only because the nation and the world actually was able to watch gavel-to-gavel coverage, it's not fair to then shut the door on us during the penalty phase, and I've compared it to reading a great novel and skipping the last chapter. You just wouldn't do it, and it's really not fair to all those of us who devoted all the time in watching every moment of that trial just to see justice for Travis and to be robbed of actually seeing that process to its fruition.
And I agree with you, Michael, but Holly Hughes from CNN, let's talk a minute about cameras in the courtroom because this is an issue. Don't you feel, let me just ask you first, how do you feel about cameras in the courtroom, yes or no, or maybe?
Yeah, I think it's a case by case. You know, the general rule is, yes, if they make an application to the court in a timely fashion, they're allowed in. However, I think that there are specific cases where you might not want them in. And let's all be real honest, Juan Martinez has never met a camera he didn't like, okay? So it doesn't surprise me that he's trying to get publicity as well. You know, he was lauded as a hero for basically just doing his job. I mean, I was a prosecutor for 10 years. Nobody was outside trying to get me to sign their cane, and I sent quite a few murderers and serial rapists and people who perpetrated hate crimes away. So he also has his own agenda. And when he's saying things like, well, Judge, I mean, you run a tight ship. Oh, come on. Let's just call that what it is, BS. She did not run a tight ship. Okay?
Oh, okay?
That woman had no control over her courtroom. When you ask how many hundred questions did the jury get to ask, and they were cumulative. And she actually asked Jody Arias, I don't know if you guys remember this, I was on air with another, you know, commentator. I was on with Susan Hendricks and Ryan Smith. And the judge literally turned to Jody and said, what is your definition of a skank? Really?
Oh, I don't remember that. Oh,
I remember that clearly.
Right, Michael, we almost fell off the sofa. We were, like, aghast that she would ask that question. It is not material to any in the case. The questions from the jury have to be sorted and agreed upon. And the judge asked all these ridiculous questions. So he's in there stroking her, like, oh, judge, you're so great. Let the cameras back in. No, she did not run a tight ship. Y'all, let's be honest. Come on, that trial went on so much longer than it had to. There was a lot of abuses. It was ridiculous. So, yeah, he has his own agenda for wanting cameras in the courtroom. So, Tricia, back to your original question. I happen to agree with her on this. I don't think we do need to have – we're all going to find out what happened. I mean, I get Michael's point about, well, you know, we watched it so far. Yeah, but you know what? If we don't remember the stories of history, we're doomed to repeat it. And that trial did get completely out of control, and it was because of the cameras. So now she's trying to preserve the integrity of this. And you know what? Jurors, they're not going to want to give her death. People know who they are. And I know we don't show their faces, but come on. People walking in and out of that courtroom every day know who they are. They know, you know, they can follow them home. They can watch what car they get into. So she's trying at this point to ensure that justice is done for Travis and that this jury is not afraid. And they're not afraid to make an unpopular decision, which a lot of people – you know, we'll think death is unpopular because we don't like to kill pretty young things. Well, let's look at the crime that the pretty young thing committed, and let's, you know, give the appropriate punishment. And would we all like to watch the gore? Sure, because we do it when we're driving down the road, Tricia. We all rubberneck at the accident. We want to see what happened. But the bottom line is we're going to find out. It will be reported whatever the end result is. So I agree with Judge Stevens on this particular issue.
Well, I do see your point.
Because, especially because most of us are not familiar with what the retrial of a penalty phase even looks like. So it's a good learning tool for those of us out here to see how that actually works, because I understand that this jury has to accept the verdicts from the first jurors. That's a given. But you can't just get in 12 people with however many alternates and say, okay, you accept this, and we'll move on from there. Most of us want to see, well, what does that look like? How does someone like Juan make a summation of all of that testimony to get them at least there where they can see how the first jury reached that verdict and then make the argument? I mean, if it was just penalty phase alone, he could just simply put up the autopsy photos and say she killed him three times, essentially, and go over the premeditation facts that the jury found, and all of her lies and deception to the jury, and call it a day. I mean, I could see it wrapping up in 2 days, but from what I understand, there will be witnesses again, and I just don't understand what it will look like. So out of a legal curiosity and Arizona's odd law that allows the retrial of a penalty phase, I want to see it.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I don't know. Where does it stand now, Holly? Do you know if it – she said no cameras in the courtroom. Aren't media outlets trying to get that overturned? Or can they?
Absolutely.
I don't know.
They can. They can appeal it. It's what we call an interlocutory appeal, which means while the issue is still pending, they're going to try and go above her head to a higher court and say, this is a violation of, you know, freedom of the press. We have a right to a public forum. We want, you know, like Michael was pointing out, we want to see it. And for different reasons. I mean, you know, some people, because they rubberneck in an accident, some people because they have a legal curiosity. But the media outlets are absolutely fighting this tooth and nail, and their lawyers have filed to appeal her decision. And, you know, eventually they may win. I mean, it's very, very difficult to keep the cameras out if they have made the proper application. So, you know, it's yet to see. We'll see what plays out, but I think ultimately the media outlets will probably win, and they will get back in there. And what we're going to see, to address Michael's question, what we're going to see is what the state puts up is what we call the aggravating factors, and what the defense puts up is what we call the mitigating factors. So, yes, Juan is going to relive this entire crime for the jury. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Michael, when you pointed out the two big things are, number one, the brutality of the crime. So we are going to see the autopsy photos. We are going to see that awful gash to his throat. We are going to see the blood and the gunshot wound. And then we're going to hear, without a doubt, all of her lies and manipulation and deception, because what he needs to convince the new jury is, do not believe and do not be manipulated by anything Jodi Arias says, because that's how she lives her entire life, is manipulating other people, trying to get you to feel sorry for her and look at her as the victim. So we're going to see the replay of the crime and the trial, but then we're also going to see, I mean, my gosh, Stephen Alexander, right? The, you know, the sisters, we're going to see all of that as they come up there and they say, this is why we want the ultimate penalty. So that poor family is going to have to go through that all the way again. And what will be really fascinating is to see if Jodi's team does anything differently, because they didn't call her mother to the stand to cry and say, please spare my daughter's life. They didn't call her childhood best. They didn't call anybody. They had her stand up there and do what? Talk about how great Jodi is. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you know, don't kill me because, gee, I can start Locks of Love in prison and I can teach other people. Really? It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So I'll be fascinated to see if the defense puts up something different than they did last time.
And joining us tonight is Holly Hughes from CNN, of course, my co-host, Michael in Minnesota. And on the phone with us, our dear, good friend, we love you dearly, Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Hi, Cheryl.
How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. We've just been discussing Jodi Arias, and we have wrapped that up, so you don't need to worry about Jodi. We've got it all
handled. We haven't.
What?
We've still got to talk about her bracelets, darling.
Oh,
she's selling bracelets to raise money for her appellate fund. And so, Holly, I had a question for you.
Yes,
I
forgot.
Recall
you're right.
At the end of the trial, of course, the Alexanders remained silent. They're not speaking to the press, but they had an attorney who said he would be filing suit against Jodi's to make sure that she wasn't able to profit from sale of her artwork or any manuscript she may write or whatever. Can someone who's been convicted raise money by selling bracelets for an appellate process like she is doing? It was set up out of Oregon, and Sky was telling me it was set up in Oregon because they have laws that say the family can't go after it. But I don't know anything about that, so I was hoping maybe you or Cheryl would know something about this.
Well, there's a couple different issues at play here. We used to have what they called the Son of Sam laws, which was based on the case out of New York many, many years ago where David killing couples in parked cars. So they, you know, petitioned the court and sued and said you should not be able to profit from your crime. You know, you can't go out and kill somebody and then write a bestseller about how you killed somebody. But the distinction is, because the Supreme Court kind of carved that up, there were a lot of appellate challenges to that, and they carved it up, but here's the distinction. You cannot profit from your crime. So if she was selling bracelets that had anything to do with the murder, okay, if she was trying to use Travis's name on a bracelet, that she would not be able to profit from. But if she's just, you know, doing her artwork and it has nothing to do with the murder, then that's kind of commerce. That's free trade. She's allowed to do whatever she wants. But here's the secondary issue. The secondary issue is if they sue her for wrongful death, then they can seize all the profits she makes. Because that is not, that's just money she has that they can get in a judgment. So if they get a judgment saying you've got to pay the Alexander family $1 million, well, she's going to have to sell a heck of a lot of bracelets to satisfy that judgment.
Boy, that's the truth. Cheryl McCollum, your thoughts on this, please.
Well, my thoughts are, you know, probably a lot like yours, but I don't think that, you know, anybody should profit in any way. I think once you go to prison, that ought to be it. However, you know, Charlie Manson has record albums that you can buy, and John Wayne Gacy had paintings, so it's not unheard of. It's not something we don't know about. It's, you know, it's a thriving business if there's supply and demand, and unfortunately there is a small community of people that do seek out these types of items that are, you know, artwork from serial killers and the lot. So I'm sure she'll sell a few.
And she will. And speaking of serial killers, Charles Manson, he obviously controlled the serial killers in his life. He is going to be married. And I'm like, you know, I have trouble getting a date. How does Charles Manson get married in prison? I mean, well, how does that happen? Holly Hughes, enlighten me.
Yeah, Trisha, the reason you can get a date is because you look like Ernest Borgnine, sweetheart.
I'm going to change that.
Okay, you just need to stop putting that out there, girl, okay? Charlie is right. There is a segment of the population. I mean, go on the internet and look up the word murder memorabilia. It's called murderabilia. It's out there. I mean, people, look at Richard Ramirez. Look at Ted Bundy. I mean, there is just no accounting for taste, okay? So the fact that someone is marrying Charlie Manson does not surprise me in the slightest. I think there's something seriously wrong with her. I think there's probably multiple things wrong with her. But, you know, it could just honestly be somebody who's a groupie who wants the attention, who wants to be on TV, and this is the only way they can get there.
Yeah, I call it famous by proxy.
That's it. Yeah. That's it, Cheryl. Cheryl McCollum.
Can you imagine your American Express card? Yes, I'm Mrs. Charlie Manson. You think you can bump me up to first class? I mean, what the?
Maybe they probably would. They just wouldn't want to make Charlie mad at them.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, there's all kinds of things that could happen being married to Charles Manson. Maybe we can get her on the show. Now, that would be somebody I would want to talk to. And there you go. She's getting attention because she's going to marry Charles Manson. Okay, let's move on to our next topic. We're kind of covering the two big cases.
Wait a minute. Now, Trisha, if you want to talk to someone, think about it. Every handsome person or good-looking woman that's behind bars receives and usually does get married. I remember...
Well, that's
aren't
right.
Aren't both of the Menendez brothers married at this point?
I think they are. So what you're
and
saying is I need to commit a crime and get behind bars, then I can get a marriage proposal.
No,
well,
I'm not saying that.
Well, you could just propose to Charlie. Maybe you're better looking than the one he's agreed to marry.
I'll give
him a call. Fight for him, Trisha. Fight for him. Hey, you know,
I'm just,
speaking
there's
of
plenty
Carol
of wives
killers,
out there.
There are.
Ted Bundy got married in court during his trial.
That's right, he did, and I think she had a baby by him. They had a she had one of those visits where that can happen.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Just creepy. Speaking of creepy, George Zimmerman, we're going to talk about him because he was as big or bigger in some ways than Jodi Arias. The George Zimmerman case, what can I say about George Zimmerman? I mean, well, the good news is we have Cheryl here from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. And, Cheryl, we had a show on every single night talking about George Zimmerman. And now, if I remember correctly, he was taken into custody, wasn't arrested, because his girlfriend, Samantha Scheib, said that he threatened her. And now she's totally backed off from that. Wait, do you know what the story is here? I mean... did it really happen? Now his girlfriend, Scheib, is saying that the police intimidated her. And so they've released part of the video of the police questioning her, and they were as nice as can be. Now, granted, it was just part of the video, but I don't know why they would change their, what they were doing and start intimidating her. But anyway, she's totally backed off from the whole thing. Cheryl, can you kind of explain what's going on?
Well, first there was the wife, if you remember, the wife and the claim that
Shelley.
He had attacked the father, her father. So,
right, but this
Cheryl,
is
by
this
the
is
way.
This is just recently that this happened and come out in the wash. What happened?
But again, I think for the general public, she called them, so they didn't just show up and start questioning her and intimidating her. She called them over there, And then they have to do, you know, some type of investigation, which they brought her downtown and they interviewed her, which is pretty standard. And, you know, the videotape that I saw, she was the one with her arms crossed and being somewhat agitated. They were very calm and very professional, and it was, you know, right out of the playbook, Investigation 101 of Family Violence. But again,
right.
I think it's hard for people to accept a lot that this person is going to say when she got into a relationship with the full knowledge of who and what this person was and potentially was going to be to her.
Mm-hmm.
She's had family violence charges. That was very public. He has no problem defending himself lethally. He has no problem, it appears, having a weapon on him at all times. And accessibility could be a factor for people if you have a bad temper. And then, of course, he recently had another allegation of family violence. So when she tries to play this, oh, I never saw it coming, that's a little difficult for me. And again, she seems a little more carnival barker than, you know, a victim that never saw anything bad coming down the pipe.
Exactly. Now, do we know if they are hooked back up together? Have we heard anything about that?
I do not know that.
Because
no.
I looked and looked and I couldn't see anything. Would that surprise you, Cheryl? That if
no.
she went back to him, wouldn't surprise me
no.
at all.
No. Again, straight out of the playbook. They
mm-hmm.
say that there's an average that if they're a true victim, they leave an average of 11 times before they leave for good. So if it's
oh,
somebody,
boy.
And I don't know what her situation is with him. I mean, I have the truth. I don't know. But a lot of times if you're in it for the fame and attention and you're in it to see what you can get out of it, then if she did not get the result that she wanted, it would behoove her to go back and try again to bait him to get the reaction that she needs.
Right.
If that's what she's in it for. If it's for attention and, oh, look, you know, George Zimmerman punched me. Well, whatever. I mean.
Yeah, you're right, Cheryl. You're absolutely right. Holly, I don't believe we talked to you about the Zimmerman case when we've had you on before. And I'm sure that was a big topic that you had on CNN. Holly Hughes with CNN with us tonight as well. What? Just weigh in. Tell us what you think of all of this.
Well, I think Cheryl hit the nail on the head. It's like the story we were just talking about. These people will pursue folks who are high profile, whether it's Charlie Manson, Ted Bundy, Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker out in San Francisco. And she knew exactly what she was getting into when she entered the relationship. What struck me, I've also watched the interview that the police did with her, and she was so familiar with those guns. She's like, well, then he took the AK out and he unloaded the clip,
mm-hmm.
and then he pulled out the shotgun and, you know, it was a Mossberg
mm-hmm.
or whatever, you know, and it was this and it was that. She was so familiar with those guns, and she said, you know, I had tried to put him out before, but blah, blah. Okay, here's the deal. If you know this man has all these guns, all these weapons, all this ammunition in your house, and you want him out, do you not pack that all up, sit it out in the front yard, call him up and say, come get it, and lock your door? Do you not call the police ahead of time and say, okay, you know, I need this man to leave my home. I need him to move out. Can you please come and just be here while it's happening to make sure nothing She knew exactly what she was doing. The police did not intimidate her. I mean, that detective who conducted the interview, he wasn't leading her. He had a victim
nope.
advocate in the room with her. He crossed all his T's, dotted all his – he did it exactly like he should have. And
uh-huh.
now she's saying, first of all, she's not easily intimidated, okay? Like Cheryl said, look at her body language on there.
Yes.
Look at how familiar she is with the weapons. Look at how she ran down the list of, it happened exactly this way. Okay, Cheryl will tell you, when things like that happen, they're not able – well, how many times – well, he did exactly this, and the bag was
Correct.
Right here, and the shotgun was exactly on the top – and he picked it up with this hand on the barrel and this hand on the butt of the gun, and then he turned it to his right, and he tapped it on the table once. Oh, no, 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 no. When you
right.
are scared and that is going down as a victim, you're like, all I know is he grabbed that gun out of the bag and he smashed it on the table, and I was scared from it. She's not scared. She's not upset. She is not crying. She is not nervous. She knew
right.
exactly what she was doing.
And you're absolutely right. That's true. And I would not be surprised one single bit to see her, I think her name, oh, I can't even remember her name, Samantha Scheib, back with George Zimmerman. Anybody that goes with George Zimmerman has got to know that he, number one, he's feeling cocky, that he is untouchable, and that he loves guns, and he has a temper. I mean, that is such a recipe for disaster. And why anybody would go with George Zimmerman like that, I don't know. But, yeah, we're going to see a lot of these. Sure.
The other piece of that recipe, to me, the other ingredient, is what we talked about over the summer. He's bulletproof.
There you
and
go,
every
right.
single time the police show up and nothing happens to him, he's a little cocky and a little cockier. They can't touch me. They're not taking my weapons. They don't believe you. I'm telling you, it's
You're
not
right.
going to end well, and he's never, ever, ever going away.
We're going to hear a lot more of these phone calls, absolutely. Michael in Minnesota, I'll give you the last word on George Zimmerman before we move on to Talika Patrick and that very, very odd case.
Well, I was wondering if anyone knows or has heard any more about the federal investigation into going after him for a hate crime. Did that ever find legs, or did that kind of dwindle
Yeah, I'll jump
the
in. There's not one. There never was one, and that was just something else people had to get on the TV and talk about. There was absolutely zero evidence of a hate crime. This is done. It was finished the very day that jury came back. It's over.
So there's
there never was a federal investigation.
They were just talking like of the well. They were just apparently the Trayvon side.
No, I'm not asking you. That was rhetorical. I'm saying of
okay.
what.
You're right.
Didn't violate anybody's civil rights. There was no hate crime. The only person that used a racial slur was Trayvon, according to every witness they put up.
Right. Exactly.
And
the feds did
look into it initially. Before the state even proceeded with the prosecution, and the federal authorities said there is no hate crime here. And then, like Cheryl pointed out, on the back, it was initially investigated by the feds, and they very quickly concluded it was not a hate crime. We're going to let the state deal with it. Well, of course, when the jury came back and said not guilty, a lot of folks, like Cheryl said, wanted 5 more minutes on the television, wanted something to holler about, wanted something else to go after. And so that's when they said, well, we're going to push for a federal investigation. Well, that was a done deal at the time they started hollering for it because they had already investigated and said, no hate crime here.
Oh, I get it.
All done. Wow. See what you learn when you listen to this show? I had no idea. Okay, we're going to move on because this is such a bizarre subject, and it's really a big case over at websleuths.com. Now, we have two threads going about Dr. Talika Patrick. One is in our missing forum, which the public can read, and the other is in our private forum, the parking lot. And on those particular threads, we talk about the social media aspect, Facebook, YouTube. So if you would like to join in, you do have to join WebSleuths if you want to read that part of the Talika Patrick story. But I just want to kind of talk about Talika first and let everybody know what the situation here. She has a medical degree and a doctorate in biochemistry. Talika Patrick, she's 30. She's a first-year resident at Western Michigan University's medical school program. She was last seen December 5th in the parking lot of the Borges Medical Center in Kalamazoo. That's where she worked. Her car was later found in a ditch 100 miles away in Indiana. She vanished. She's just gone. Now, according to the Detroit Free Press, after finishing her shift at 7 p.m. at the Borges, Patrick got a ride from a male co-worker to the downtown Radisson Hotel. She was seen on surveillance footage at the hotel wearing a black hoodie and black slacks and attempted to check into a room. She had no identification, only cash, and ended up leaving. The hotel shuttle service took her back to the medical center. She got in her car, and that was the car that was found 100 miles away. It had all her ID in it. It had her cash. Did not have the car keys. Now, of course, the question that investigators want the answers to, what caused her to drive more than 100 miles west without her cell phone and purse, never talked to her friends or family. She was supposed to be going down to visit her family. She had a ticket for December 23rd to go to Florida. The family has hired a private detective, and there are videos on YouTube that have surfaced of Talika singing to someone and addressing someone in a romantic way. All of that's on YouTube. Now, here's the other odd twist. According to Huffington Post and everybody, Grammy-nominated gospel singer Marvin Sapp received a personal protection order against Talika about 3 months before she went missing. Now, Sapp says Talika Patrick claimed to be his wife, contacted his teenage children, and had been to his home. He has said she also joined his church after moving from California, so she moved to Michigan to be closer to this guy. He says, I have at least 400 pages of correspondence from her, and I have never responded to. And now, the private detective that the family hired has stated he thinks there's foul play involved. And also, according to the Detroit Free Press, her ex-husband says she suffers from delusions and paranoia, although Talika's sister has said she doesn't know of any mental problems. That's where we stand right now. So I want to go to Holly Hughes first of CNN. She's in the medical program. She's a doctor. She has a biochemistry doctorate degree. But yet, according to her ex-husband, she was delusional. She heard voices. You know, she had all kinds of mental problems. That actually led, he said, to their breakup. How can somebody, I mean, she's at the residence program. She's, I don't know what she's doing. I don't know if she's with patients or what the deal is, but how can somebody with that type of severe mental illness get her way through school, get a doctorate degree?
Well, there's a couple different things here. Number one, if she has not ever been diagnosed, and if it doesn't affect what she's doing in school, I mean, you have to look at the flip side of this. How would any educational institution say to her, you can't participate because we think you have a mental illness? I mean, the ACLU would sue the pants off of that institution. You know, remember Adam Lanza? Adam Lanza was going for his chemistry degree, was he not? He was supposedly a biochemist and brilliant, and look what he turned out to do. So, you know, you can't just involuntarily, you know, commit someone unless they have exhibited signs that they're dangerous to themselves, they're dangerous to somebody else. And, you know, her husband or ex-husband is now saying, well, she has mental issues. Okay, but did anybody in her family ever address that? Did they try to involuntarily commit her? Did they have her, you know, seen by somebody? Or is this all in hindsight? Now we're going, well, yeah, she was a little bit off-center. Yeah, she wasn't quite right. Well, okay, but being a little off-center may not affect how she does her studies and how she goes about, you know, functioning day to day. And it sounds to me, based on what we're now hearing, like she might have voluntarily disappeared. She purposely left her cell phone behind, and Cheryl, that's so she can't be tracked. She can't be pinged. They can't locate her with the GPS on her cell phone. And she's done that before in the articles I've read. You know, she's purposely gone off and left her cell phone somewhere else because she thinks someone's tracking her. So while it's heartbreaking for her family that she's disappeared, and there may very well be mental issues, that you can't just say to someone, you can't be part of this institution. If she had the grades and she had the qualifications and she passed the admissions test, then they've got to let her in.
Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Institute, weigh in on the Talika Patrick missing persons case, please.
Well, the part that really concerns me is she moved to be near the Grammy singer.
Sapp, yes.
She joined his church. She verbally told people they were married. Okay, this behavior scares me a little bit. That's not being infatuated, which is what her sister said. Infatuation is, oh my gosh, he's so attractive, and that's where it stops. You might go to a movie of that person, or you might go to a concert, but you don't move to their town and go to their church and be near them and then start telling people you're married to them who incidentally know that you're not. So
exactly.
She was not hiding the fact that she had a mental problem. Mm-hmm. And when the family says, oh, we weren't aware of anything, yes, they were. Let's all be honest, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know it. You may not know what it is. You may not have ever got her diagnosed, but you know something is off. Something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, that old saying, there's a thin line between genius and crazy.
Yes, and love and hate.
And I think this is but I mean, for her, I think she is a genius.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean she's not mentally ill, too. You can be more than one thing.
Yeah, well, that is absolutely true. Well, Cheryl, do you think that this Grammy-nominated gospel singer, Marvin Sapp, should be worried about his safety?
Yeah.
No, not at this point. And I'll tell you why. She wouldn't have waited this long. She would not have let the holiday go by because they, you know what I mean? If she did not go to Florida, it would have been because she would have gone toward him. It's too cold. She doesn't have money. She doesn't have her car. She's not in her house. She's not with her family. She's not in a good place at all, if she's still alive.
Right.
So all of these things really exhibited themselves after the protective order was served to her. And so to her, whatever her true belief was in her head, see, it's different, reality versus what she believed. That restraining order, protective order, was like divorce papers. So even when she went into that hotel, she did not have her ID. Forget where her car was at that point. All she wanted to do was pay in cash. She didn't want anybody to know who she was. I have a really strong feeling she might have had a pocket full of medicine from that hospital with the intent to harm herself at that hotel.
That's what I was thinking. She didn't want anybody to know, and that's what I'm concerned about. I mean, her family obviously is beside themselves with worry. And when you read about Talika Patrick, I mean, she is a genius. What a wonderful human being to have on this planet to pick medicine to go into so she can help others. And that's why this is so tragic. Michael, jump in. I know you were thinking that maybe the gospel singer Marvin Sapp should be worried, but after listening to Cheryl, do you think so?
Well, I definitely see Cheryl's point, but all of her behaviors were obsessive-compulsive. I mean, think of Jodi Arias. They're the moving to be near someone who doesn't want you to even be there. So I would be very uncomfortable. A piece of paper, like an order of protection, doesn't really mean much to psychopaths. And if she had flipped over and, in her reality, thought that there was this deep affair or love that God had bestowed between these two. This is something I had read. She believed it was God saying, this is your partner and you have to be near him, and that's what prompted her to move to Michigan. I mean, that's a psychosis, and I don't think I'd be rest easy until she was found and dealt with before I would rest comfortably in my home with my family. I don't know. That's just me.
Does anybody know, and if you speak up, tell me your name so our audience knows who is speaking, how this started with Talika Patrick and Marvin Sapp? Did they know each other? Did she just pick up on him from television? Does anybody know how it got started? Cheryl, go ahead.
Is that they did not know each other, that she knew of his megachurch and she knew of his music, and she moved there to basically meet him and be with him.
Wow. And see, that to me is scary. That makes me think of Rebecca Schaefer, you know, the young actress.
She does, but let me tell you the difference with Rebecca Schaefer and her killer.
Okay.
Or with Jodi Arias. In order to do what they did, there was planning. There was a vehicle involved. There was a paid private investigator. There was weapons purchased. There was writings and phone calls, and all of these things were involved. For all intents and purposes, she's fallen off. There's been no communication with anyone. We don't know if she's gone to a shelter. I mean, she's so public. Her face is so well known now on Facebook. You can't be on Facebook more than an hour without seeing some story. Nancy Grace has had it. You've had it. I mean, everybody's pretty familiar with her. And between her home and where a car was found in Indiana, it's inundated. So she's on foot without any money or ID, no credit card, no nothing. She can't even get back to where he is without help from at least four people. So that's why I don't think she's sitting somewhere plotting. Again, it's snowing. It's the coldest day they've had in 100 years.
Right.
I don't feel good about her safety.
I don't either. Now, I did read where the private detective felt there was foul play. it could be, and tell me if I'm up in the night here, but it could be that Talika Patrick might have met somebody that she jumped into the car with, and perhaps something happened there, and it has nothing to do with anything that we're talking about. Cheryl, do you think that's a possibility?
It's a possibility, but again, I don't usually put a lot of money on chance meetings with a criminal. If her car wound up in a ditch, it's likely she could have hit her head and become disoriented and walked a mile and a half. It could be right there.
Well, that very well could be. Go ahead.
It's hard for me to fathom that she's had all this erratic, unusual behavior. She's got a protective order. She drives 100 miles, crashes her car, and lo and behold, who stops to help her but a kidnapper slash killer? And again, her body hasn't surfaced. So it's not like
right.
they dumped her in the woods, strangled. I mean, we have not found her.
Well, I'm assuming that they've probably done a huge search of the area, I hope, for her body. If she just walked out and took drugs and lay down, I'm assuming they've done a big search of the area. I haven't read that yet. But I think that's a safe assumption to say. Holly Hughes, when you were a prosecutor, let me ask you something. To me, mental illness, and I want to do a whole show on this soon, but to me, mental illness is really at the core of many of our crimes, be it if you're a drug addict, you steal to get drugs or whatever. When you were a prosecutor, did you see that? Did you have to send, unfortunately, a lot of people to prison who you know they really just needed to go to the hospital?
Absolutely. And the problem is that there's no other place to put them. You know, back in the Reagan era when he cut all the federal funding and all of those folks who were in state-run psychiatric hospitals got dumped out onto the street. There is no place to put them, and it is heartbreaking when you get somebody, and I'm not talking about, you know, your druggies who, you know, they're purposely shooting up, they're willfully going out and buying crack, and then they're robbing somebody to get some more crack. I'm talking about people with real, honest-to-goodness mental illnesses, and
sure.
It sounds like this lady is one of those, okay?
Uh-huh.
There is no place to put these people. There is, you know, the family doesn't have the money to put them into a private institution, and a lot of times the family is in denial. It's like Cheryl said earlier, really? Like, you didn't know? She moved halfway across the country to live near a man she had never met and told everybody they were married, and you didn't think there was a problem? I mean, you know, I've got a stalker. Cheryl knows. Well, I've got a couple,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I've got one that literally sends me just dozens and dozens and dozens of letters. He, you know, sends me presents that he makes in the prison workshop. I mean, I literally get all
Ooh.
Kinds of crazy stuff. And I've had to, Cheryl and I have put them together in a packet and sent them to a criminal profiler, a good friend
uh-huh.
of ours, Betsy Ramsey, who was fantastic, and said, you know, here's what you need to do to be safe, and this is what you have. So, you know, people who exhibit this type of behavior, of course there's something wrong with them. You know,
right.
but unfortunately, once they've committed a crime, and I'm not suggesting that this particular lady has, this doctor, I think she just checked out. You know, sadly, I mean, I think she voluntarily went missing.
Uh-huh.
I'm with Cheryl. I don't, you know, you're having a bad day and you crash your car in a ditch and the first person who comes along is a serial killer? Really? Come on,
mm-hmm.
y'all. That just doesn't happen like that. So, you know, it is heartbreaking, but sometimes there's no other option. What do you do with these folks? They've committed a crime, so you've got a victim and a victim's family that you need to address and you need to get justice for, but then what about the defendant? You know, and how do we stop it from happening again? If it's truly a mental illness, we need to get them treated because at some
mm-hmm.
point they're going to get out of prison. If it's not a murder, they're going to get out of prison.
That's
and where
right.
are they going to go? Right back to the street, right back to the same situation they were in. Nobody's addressed the root problem. You know, it's just, we mentioned Adam Lanza earlier, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There is just such a huge problem. I know we all want to harp on gun control, but how about the person holding the gun? Mental illness is a
exactly.
huge part of this problem. Mental illness, unaddressed mental illness, untreated mental illness is the reason. I mean, you know, I own a gun. But, and some people would say I'm mentally ill, but, you know, I've never been diagnosed. So, you know, but I'm not out there shooting anybody with my gun. I'm not being irresponsible because I don't have, you know, delusions and compulsions that are going to make me go do something criminal with it. And that's what we need to start addressing. We need to honestly assess the problem.
That,
and
Trisha, I couldn't
agree
more.
I don't think you can overstate what we know happened with Mr. Sapp. If I came on your show and said, hey, this is really cool, Matthew McConaughey is making a movie in Atlanta, and I met him. Cool.
Right.
Right? If I
right.
came on your show and said, Trisha, sorry, I couldn't call in until 8:30, but, you know, I'm married to Matthew McConaughey, and, well, he took his shirt off, and, well, whatever. What?
Yeah.
Now you're crazy.
Right.
You have rolled right in the middle of downtown Crazy Town, period.
Uh-huh.
So if she's going around telling people she's married to him, that's the biggest flag in this whole parade. And again,
yeah.
I'm not blaming any family because I think there's got to be some sense she got into medical school, she's going to be okay. She's going to be a doctor and help people. She'll be able to make sure she's okay. Just like, you know, the child in Littleton, you know, Connecticut and Colorado and Aurora, they were all academically accomplished people.
Yeah.
But their families dadgum well knew something's not right. Did they ever dream that was going to be the case? Of course not. But we had a case very similar to the doctors here in Atlanta. Holly, you probably remember, very accomplished young businesswoman. She parked her BMW on the side of the highway and just vanished. Well, everybody thought, oh, my Lord, a killer got her, a rapist got her. She walked 1 mile into the woods and literally froze to death.
Yep.
Under a fallen tree.
Yeah.
Under a fallen tree. I mean, she was trying to get warm and kind of, you know, dug her way in a little bit. But with the element, she was so disoriented. She wasn't sure where she was. She was literally right there, but they couldn't find her. Cadaver dogs couldn't find her. And I'm just saying, with it being so cold and the snow and
it might be difficult.
There.
She could be right there, and that's absolutely right. And one thing I want everyone to remember as well, let's take Talika's example. She's at medical school, and let's say her family is very worried about her mental health. They can't force her to go into a mental health facility. If she's not a danger to herself or to someone else, there is nothing you can do, and that is why you see homeless people going around babbling, and you know they're mentally ill, but you can't force them into an institution because they have to be dangerous. And that, to me, is one of the biggest crimes of all, is we have mentally ill people who are homeless only because they are mentally ill. And we're a big enough society that we should be able to take care of them. But, boy, it is a huge, huge problem. And, Michael, I'm going to go ahead.
Let me just say one thing real quick. Holly hit on another thing that is huge. And Holly and I both are involved with colleges. Colleges cannot turn you away. So a lot of times when people can academically be successful, they have somewhere to live for 4 or 6 or 12 years.
Good point.
So they're not homeless, but they are deteriorating quickly. And so, again, it's not illegal to be crazy.
I know, and it's sad. It's very sad. Also, we have somebody in the chat room, Karen, and I apologize, I can't read the last name. It's kind of, my screen is messed up. But anyway, Karen says that investigators have executed several search warrants just hours ago. I don't know where, but that would be very interesting to find out what they have. And also, I did read this, and I forgot to bring it up. The apparently, Talika Patrick, on this video that they have, she was ducking in between cars at the Kalamazoo Hospital before vanishing, like she was worried like somebody was chasing her. And that could have been
paranoid.
A delusion. Yeah, that could
paranoid.
Have just been... Yeah, paranoid, exactly. And that's what's so tragic. Okay, before we get to Levi, Michael, you haven't weighed in yet. I'd like to hear your thoughts, please.
I don't know what to think about it. It's just one of those baffling mysteries. I wanted to ask either Holly or Cheryl, and I'm sorry the names are escaping me, but do you remember the case of the girl who had got gas and she disappeared and then a man was arrested? And he apparently had smoked a joint with her or something, And then I haven't heard any more about that case. What was that case and what's ever happened with it?
Holly may remember the name. I don't remember her name either, and I apologize, but it was also in a rural part of the country, and he had a trailer that he pulled around and would hunt out of. And I remember saying, I think on the Nancy Gray show, that's where I would start as an investigator. I would top to bottom that trailer. I'd need, you know, one piece of her hair, whatever would be in it, because I think that's how he transported her. And I've never heard anything else either. I don't think they ever recovered her. And if they have, I certainly hadn't heard. But
yeah, I don't think, and I remember that too, and I cannot, and as soon as I remember the name, I'm going to.
He was arrested. Yeah,
right.
He was arrested, though. Yeah.
And, it's not.
Well, he was being tracked and everything, and they were going to haul him in and question him or something, or see if there was probable cause, because I think they did find a hair, didn't they? And then we were going to talk about it again, and somehow the next thing came up, and I've never had any resolution to that case.
You know what, Michael? I'll look into that and see what we can find. The name escapes me as well, but maybe we can talk about it in the coming weeks, because I think that's an excellent one to get an update. There are so many, unfortunately. We can just go on and on and on, but the good news is there is somebody else on scene right now who is going to be talking about all of these true crime cases, and that is our good friend Levi Page is back with a new show. Hi, Levi.
Hi, Tricia. And that case that you all were talking about, it was Alexis Murphy.
Thank you.
There you
That's
go.
It.
In Virginia, yes.
That's
you,
it.
You have the best memory. I just want you to follow me around all day long. For everything I forget, I can just turn to you and you can just say it. I swear. Your memory is amazing.
Well,
okay, well.
I remembered that case as well, and there's actually some news that happened this weekend, because I was reading about it right before we got, there's a press conference scheduled in the case tomorrow, and it's regarding Randy Taylor, the suspect in the 17-year-old girl's abduction. There's a press conference in that case.
Wow, we'll follow that.
At 3 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow.
Okay,
oh,
definitely.
Thank you. That's amazing. Isn't that funny?
I know. Out of all the cases for you to bring up, Michael, that was a good one.
And
that
Levi
was good, though.
Levi has the answer. That's just wonderful.
He has the answers to everything. I swear you do. And Levi, the good news is you're coming back on the air. I was so upset when you decided not to do a Skype interview a radio show or a Skype telecast. And I'm like, what are you doing? I just wanted to smack you upside the head, but you're back. Tell us about it. What's the deal? What's going on?
Yeah, I took a break, but I'm going to be back, and you can find out all the details at levipageshow.com. That's my website, and you can even listen to the show from the website, levipageshow.com, and I'm going to be back. I've been preparing and lining up guests for the show. I don't know who my first guest is going to be, but I did email with Jane Velez Mitchell from HLN. She's going to be on the show. The coming weeks, and Thursday nights is when the show airs, Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, and one thing that I really want to talk about is the latest in the Madeline McCann case. I don't know if you all know the latest in that case, the U.K. police are now saying that they have identified the three people that they think abducted Madeline McCann. And these three people, they say, are a gang, that they were thieves, that they broke into the home, the beach resort that the McCann family was staying at in 2007 when Madeline went missing from Portugal. And they say they've identified three men. They're not, this is the UK police we're talking about, where the McCann family is from. They say they've identified three men. However, they cannot make an arrest because they can't go into a foreign country and arrest someone. They don't know where these men are from. We don't know. I think the UK police do. But the public doesn't know who they are, where they're from, what country they're living in. But the UK police say they've identified three men that broke into the home. They disturb Madeline McCann. I think she has some other siblings in the resort home sleeping with her while her parents were out drinking and partying. And they disturbed Madeline. She woke up. I guess the other ones did not woke up, according to the theory of the UK police, Scotland Yard. And they took Madeline with them. That's the theory.
And so we don't know if Madeline is still alive or what's going on. So, you know what, that, again, I talked a little bit at the beginning of the show, and you didn't hear it, Levi, but I talked about one of my New Year's resolutions is not to rush to judgment. My first thoughts when Madeline went missing was those darn parents. But, you know, as the case went on and the parents kept fighting and fighting, it just became, to me, fairly obvious that they were railroaded because that's what everybody wanted to believe. We don't want to believe that boogeymen come in the night and steal our children. But
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I mean, the Portugal police did not. The Portugal police did not get 100% participation from the McCann family. I think that like the Ramsey family. Remember, the Ramseys would only answer pre-approved questions.
Right.
From police, and the McCanns did the same. They were not 100% cooperative with the Portugal police, and the Portugal police have claimed that they have, evidence that a deceased Madeline McCann was in that Portugal resort. I think cadaver dogs hit in the resort they were staying at, and even in the rental car that the McCanns had. The McCanns say, the rental car, we didn't rent that car until 10 days later, and they dispute some of the findings of the cadaver dogs, and they claim that the Portugal police were unnecessarily targeting them and were tunnel visioned. But, you know, they were not very cooperative. I think there's a lot of suspicion swirling around them, McCann, still to this day.
Well, what I think happened, their ultimate
responsibility, Patricia, because they left their child alone while they went out partying.
That's true. But you're right, Michael. You're right. But let's back up here a second. If I understand correctly, and again, I could be wrong here, but it was on the advice of their attorney that the Portugal police were not, doing the right thing, and that's why they turned to the British police. Now, there is still a lot of suspicion swirling around them. But, again, it sounds like now, if you're to believe the police in Britain and, Scotland Yard, which I hold in high regard, that they feel confident they know who took Madeline. Now, again, there's always a chance it could be like the Ramseys, but I don't think Scotland Yard can be influenced by anybody but the evidence. They're not perfect. But what I'm wondering is why don't they release the names, and maybe the Portugal police will pick them up. Of course, that would be pretty cruel then maybe they might get, attacked by a mob. I don't know. I want Cheryl and Holly Hughes from CNN weigh in on this. What do you think of the McCann case?
You talking to Cheryl?
Holly, go first.
Go ahead, Holly. I'm kind of with Levi and with you. I mean, my first gut reaction was, somehow they're involved. And on the advice of attorney, I mean, you still don't have to completely shut down. You certainly don't have to be dishonest and lie about when you rent cars and all of that. So the whole thing strikes me, I don't know what Scotland Yard is up to. I don't know why they think, but it's just very odd to me that three grown men who break into burglarize would take a kid. Really?
Amen.
I mean, I'm sorry, burglars are burglars. They're not, pedophiles. By and large, you don't cross those lines. I mean, it would be one thing if they went in there specifically to snatch a child because they had seen her and they knew the parents weren't in. But this whole thing just doesn't add up to me, and it would be interesting to see as the story develops. But three grown men go in to steal stuff, and they disturb a three-year-old. A three-year-old's not going to be able to identify them. They're not going to take that kid and be saddled with her. That's ridiculous.
Levi?
Well, we've seen stuff like this before. Remember during the JonBenet Ramsey case, everyone thought, John Mark Carr did this, and it turned out that he was just a nutcase. And
I never did.
He was not even in Boulder, Colorado. whenever that happens. So we've been led on these, you know,
goose chases,
wild goose chases, if you will.
That's true.
Sometimes, I mean, and a lot of people have criticized the UK police. I know that Wendy Murphy has said that she thinks that, you know, remember, they also said that they had a man that confessed to killing Madeleine McCann just a couple of months ago. Remember, we talked about that on this show, Tricia.
Right.
He was at a dinner party, and he confessed to knowing who did it or he did it or something. We never got the full details of that. That went away. We haven't heard anything from that, and now it's three burglars. So what's going on here? Why are we getting all of these things popping up in the news about this person did it, this person did it, now three people did it from the UK police? And a lot of people have described this as a PR stunt. Because remember, a couple of months ago, they released a sketch of one person. Now it's three.
Yeah. Well, with the John Mark Carr thing and JonBenet Ramsey, that was just a farce from the beginning because of the people involved. It didn't involve the police. It involved a so-called professor from a university emailing him and basically, turning it over to the DA and saying, look, and the DA going nuts and saying, hey, we found a suspect. It was so stupid that anybody in their right mind would look at that and go, John Mark Carr didn't do that. Maybe I'm putting too much faith in Scotland Yard here. Maybe they are doing
a PR
stunt. Well,
I'm just reading some more information on the Madeleine McCann case, Tricia.
Uh-huh.
And according to the Daily Record, a UK news organization, these three suspects live in Portugal. So these are Portuguese suspects. And
right.
According to the police, mobile phone records show the men made an unusually high number of calls to each other in the hours after Madeleine disappeared in Terra de Luz, Portugal, days before her fourth birthday. So so they do have phone records that they say men made.
Well, I just hope that's not the only thing they have. You know, I would think there'd be some physical evidence. I mean, I would just, oh, my, I will be so blown away if it's just that and nothing else, you know. But stranger things have happened. Michael, what do you think? I know you were kind of chomping at the bit there. Michael in Minnesota.
Oh, I don't know. The
famous.
Bottom line is, it's tragic. It's tragic when anyone loses a child, regardless of the circumstances, with the exception of Casey Anthony. But I really do believe that the parents should never have let those children unattended to go bar hopping. And
I don't think they went bar hopping. They were at a dinner and they were
drinking.
Well, they were at a dinner, and how many yards away were they? Do you remember, Levi?
How
far away?
They said that they were taking turns, like checking to see on her, that they were taking turns. It wasn't like, you know, the children were inside and they were on the back porch or at the swimming pool on their back patio. I mean, they left the child alone in a hotel room while they were out.
On the garden level, on the first floor. So
right.
I just really, that was irresponsible no matter how
absolutely.
You cut it.
Absolutely.
Especially in a foreign country? Are you kidding
yeah.
me? I just
absolutely.
I wouldn't leave
oh,
my dog alone.
Believe me, I'm sure they have just absolutely tore themselves up over that. But I'll be curious to see, because I will really lose faith in Scotland Yard if this is just some sort of publicity, you know, a kick out there for the Madeleine McCann case. It would be very upsetting that they would stoop to that, but we'll have to wait and see. I would hope that they would have some sort of physical evidence that links those three men to that room. That's the only thing that can make me, I would assume that's what they have, and maybe I'm just assuming way too much. I don't know, but
hey,
now are you going to have
I got to get in here.
Oh, Cheryl.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Cheryl, go for it.
That's okay. What would be the point of taking a child that's 3 years old?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. I mean, I don't know, but
okay, it would either be to ransom her, which didn't happen, right? So we know that. So if they were thieves, they should want their money. So if they didn't ransom her, take that off the table. If they sold her, you're telling me they originally went for jewelry, which is a whole different kind of fence than a child?
Right.
So they decided, hey, forget the jewelry.
we'll take the 3-year-old only because she woke up. That makes no sense.
I know that doesn't make sense. But, I mean, maybe they did go in there for jewelry. That's the only thing I can think of.
And here's the other
thing. Jewelry.
You've got 3 criminals that belong to the same gang. They probably talk to each other every day. So the fact their phones were involved with each other during that time does not surprise anybody.
Right.
Me
sorry,
and Holly
guys.
Probably
that's my
talk
dog.
That same day to each other. Doesn't mean anything.
I'm sorry, guys. That's my dogs. It's
well, do you know what? You know, it's hard to take, you know, Scotland Yard seriously because I remember when they were pushing the theory that Madeline McCann was in a sex ring.
Scotland Yard actually did that? I don't remember that. They said she was in a sex ring?
Well, that was one of the things that they were investigating.
Oh, my God. I hope not. That's just ridiculous. That is... That makes me crazy.
So, you know, that's why they do the age progression of her. They have not, you know, let that part of it go. People still think that with Natalie Holloway. I mean, it happens. It doesn't make the most sense, though. People alleged it with JonBenet Ramsey, too. And that's why they thought that John Mark Carr had some legs because he was clearly, you know, in that genre
in that,
of porn.
Yeah.
I mean, that was his thing. But again, anybody that broke that case down, John Mark Carr would have never left her in her own house.
He would not have assaulted her there.
Strangers assault you outside your house if you're a child. Mm-hmm. Interfamiliar assaults you inside that house.
So let me go around the table, and then Levi, I want to talk about your show real quickly. Cheryl McCollum, Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Can you answer yes or no? Do you think the McCann parents had something to do with the disappearance of Madeline?
I could tell you they would still be on my list.
Okay. Holly
have not
Hughes
been excluded.
Have not been excluded. Holly Hughes from CNN?
Yeah, I'm with Cheryl. I wouldn't exclude them.
Okay. And Levi?
I don't know what they did or did not do, but I agree. I think they're suspicious.
And Michael?
Well, I unanimous, I guess. I do think they bear responsibility because they left her there, but what happened, I don't know, and I don't know that we'll ever know, which is tragic. But
I am leaning, yes, I would still keep them on the suspect list, but they wouldn't be right near the top because there is some suspicion there, but I don't know. I that's just my gut feeling on this case. And by golly, I have a big gut that has a lot of feeling, let me tell you, people. So we'll have to wait and see. Now, Levi, you're going to be talking about this on Thursday on your show, or are you?
I am. Thursday nights. Tune in, LeviPageShow.com. We're going to be talking about all the cases that's been in the news, and we're going to have guests on, take calls. There's going to be a chat room open, so it's going to be very interactive with the listeners. So LeviPageShow.com. I'll post a reminder on Twitter, Facebook, my website, and I hope everybody listens.
What time on Thursday?
I'll be there.
10 p.m. It's 10 Eastern.
10 p.m. Eastern?
And 9 Central.
And for how long is the show?
About an hour.
About an hour. But can it go a little over, a little under?
Sure. Yeah, we can go over if possible, yes.
Okay, good. Good, and people can call in, and so that'll be great. So everybody, Levi Page is back. We've missed him for so long. And you are the man, my friend and I, who stay with me over the holidays. We were talking about your memory, Levi, and it's like, oh, if we could have one-tenth of that guy's memory. I mean, you know, here we are talking about a case a few minutes ago. We don't even know the name, and not only do you remember the name, but you have an update on the case. It's absolutely amazing.
Unbelievable.
So Levi Page.
I
want
to know
show.
What's coming up. What's going to be the next big cases, according to Cheryl and Holly and Levi? What do you think we'll be seeing in 2014?
Let's go to Cheryl McCollum first.
Jodi Arias.
Still Jodi Arias. Holly Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, based on just our conversation tonight, everybody wants to follow Jodi. They want to know what's going on. So I expect that the death penalty phase will, you know, like I predicted earlier, I think the media will win that battle and they'll get those cameras back in the courtroom. And I think we'll be glued to, you know, some unknown station to watch it.
Yeah, some unknown place. Wild About Trials, I think, will probably be carrying it. And Levi Page.
Well, HLN says they're not doing trials anymore, but I think that they'll cover. I think there's just too many people interested in it. But I think that I don't think that Jody will be big case the first of the year, but I think the big trial is really going to be Aaron Hernandez from the New England Patriots that's charged with murder. Who think they even think that he committed a drive-by years before the murder of one of his friends. So I think that that's going to be the big case is Aaron Hernandez, who some may say he's an NFL thug who got away with a lot of things for a long time.
Well, that will be very interesting, and you will be on top of that, Levi. That will be good.
You're absolutely right.
Well, I think go ahead, Michael. You have a final comment?
Well, I wondered if anyone had heard, have they decided if they're going to retry Skakel? Has that been determined?
Levi, do you know?
I don't know. That's one thing that I don't know. You got me on that.
Cheryl, what do you think?
The last thing I heard from Skakel was that he's actually filed a lawsuit against some Nancy Grace and Beth Karras, and that's going forward. But I had not heard anything about his retrial.
Wait, back up. He's filed a lawsuit against Beth Karras and Nancy Grace?
Yeah, it's a libel suit.
Wow. I didn't know that. How about Cheryl McCollum? Have you heard anything about when Skakel? I'm sure he's going to. I mean, they're trying, probably my guess is Holly Hunter, is they're probably trying to cut a deal with him. Do you think, or do you think they're trying?
Holly Hunter?
Hunter, I'm sorry. Holly Hughes. I tried so hard not to do that this time. I've called her Holly Hunter
a
million times.
I have judges who call me Holly Hunter all the time, which is pretty funny because she was born and raised right up the road here from where I live. So I'm good
there
with
you go.
That. Now, if I had her money, I'd be even better.
There you go. Holly Hughes.
Holly Hughes. No, I have not heard anything, and quite frankly, I'm shocked that you think I would have better intel than Levi Page.
Hey,
really? You're asking me that question?
Hey,
come on, if Levi Page doesn't know Trisha, there's
nobody
just no
knows.
Way in hell I stand a chance. That's right.
Okay, Holly Hughes, you're on Saturday nights, 5 p.m. Eastern on CNN, and we want people to go to YouTube and look up Holly Hughes, Dixie Mafia, and watch that YouTube video so we can get a lot of hits so we can get you that incredible TV show. Have I got it right, Holly?
That sounds great.
Okay, and it's Holly. What's your middle initial?
B like Beth.
Yeah, B like Beth. B like the best. HollyBHughes.com. Okay, and Cheryl McCollum of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute. Is there anything else you would like to plug or promote before we head out tonight?
Well, we are going to have an exciting 2014. We've got a family member that has come to us to try to help us solve an incredible cold case from back in the day, the Zodiac. So that's what we're going to be starting to work on very soon. So it's going to be a tremendous event, I think, for us.
Well, fantastic. I hope you will come to us and we can talk about it and talk with your students about it because that sounds absolutely fascinating. Do keep us updated
on
that, okay? Okay.
All right,
and Levi Page,
thank you.
And Levi Page, the big news, your show, go to levipageshow.com. It's Thursday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. Am I correct?
You're correct.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add? Anything I've forgotten? Any thoughts, my dear, that you have floating through your brain right now?
Well, it is great to talk to you all, Trisha, Michael, Holly, Cheryl, and I hope you all have a great 2014.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You too.
Same to you,
bye.
Levi.
You too.
And, Michael, any final thoughts for our first show of 2014?
No, it was fun, though. Thank you. Thank you,
everybody. Oh, anytime. You stay warm, Michael, and everybody, thank you for joining us tonight. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, and do not – oh, wait. I do want to tell you, next week we have Robert Blecker, the author of The Death of Punishment, on, and you've got to read this book. Beth Karras will be joining us to talk to him as well, and it is going to be an amazing show and I'll tweet more about it a little bit later. But if you get a chance, look up Robert Blecker, B-L-E-C-K-E-R, The Death of Punishment. You're going to love this guy. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. We do have a wonderful sponsor. It's brought to you by Pause for Purple Hearts in Palo Alto, California. Pause for Purple Hearts is the first program of its kind to offer therapeutic intervention for veterans and active duty military personnel by teaching those with post-traumatic stress disorder to train service dogs for their comrades with combat-related injuries. Go to www.pauseforpurplehearts.org. And let's wrap it up with some legal goo, shall we? Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. And do remember, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuths.com and formsforjustice.org. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.